After some days of this, the guards abruptly handed them mops and sponges.
Use these. You've got more to clean than just this head. And the way you work, it'll take you a month with rags.
After they'd cleaned the guards' latrine, they were taken out of the brig area and down the corridor. Cecilia glanced through doorways they passed and saw stacked bunks in rows.
Crew housing? It must be.
The guards kicked open a door into a huge tiled room. Urinals on this wall, toilet stalls on that, rows of shower stalls, rows of sinks.
Start at that end. And don't miss anything.
And you'll need these.
The other unlocked a cabinet in which were toilet bowl brushes and jugs of chemicals labeled for their intended use. Cecilia headed for the far end and dipped a brush in a toilet bowl. Miranda, without saying a word, went to the urinals. Aside from choosing a urinal she'd already cleaned to use, the guards didn't harass them that day. Cecilia scrubbed, polished, mopped, and cleaned as if she'd been born a janitor. The guards lounged near the door, clearly bored. Within a few days, they were spending all day every day cleaning four latrines, the guards and three others on the crew deck. Cecilia was able to describe to Chief Jones in detail what equipment was being stored where, exactly what chemicals were in the equipment closets where they picked up and returned mops, brooms, sweep vacs, brushes, and sponges. Exactly how many people were usually around in each corridor and head. Day by day, she brought in more information, a snippet at a time. And day by day, their guards became more and more bored. To amuse themselves, they occasionally dirtied an area the women had cleaned and demanded that it be cleaned again. And as they'd decided, the women feigned exhausted submission. That wasn't much fun. The guards began sneaking off singly. They never actually left the women alone and unwatched, but they weren't anywhere near as alert as before. Cecilia had time to think, and one sleep shift, she told Chief Jones what had occurred to her, the answer to a question that had puzzled her since her capture.
I know what they want you alive for.
Prisoner exchange, ransom.
No, they want you for prey.
Prey?
When I was on Cerialis, when Admiral Lupescu was killed, when Harris Sorato shot him, that's what he was doing. Hunting people as sport.
The chief's eyes narrowed and focused far behind Cecilia's face.
They want a hunt, do they? Fine. We'll give them a hunt. We start now, here.
Cecilia had been prepared for shock, for anger, but not for this almost glee.
But...
No. There is only one answer. It must not be their hunt, but ours.
Harris Serrano, having finally gotten her ship in order, or mostly in order, explained their mission.
We're looking for mutineers by watching jump points and looking for out-of-range Ansible transmissions. We engage and destroy mutineers, change out the recognition codes on Ansibles and system defenses. If we find minefields, we'll clear them.
What if they leapfrog us?
They may, but if we work our way through the jump points in between, we should pick up their trail before that happens. That was the reason for rushing crews onto ships and getting them into space, to move into this area and interdict their movement. That still gives them a lot of space, but at least it protects our most vulnerable civilians.
Do you think they'd attack civilians, Captain?
I imagine they will, unless all they wanted was to run off and set up somewhere on their own. But so far, no one's reported direct communication with them. All we have is that one report from Vigor, which had the sense to run like a rabbit with a distress message when it realized there was trouble. By the time we come out of jump, I expect to hear more. If they were agents of a foreign power...
The Black Scratch.
The Benignity, or any other. I suppose someone might even have fallen in love with the lifestyle of a New Tech's religious fanatic. My point is, it's too early to form conclusions about what these mutineers are like, except dangerous. We know they took over the Copper Mountain orbital station and freed prisoners from the high security brig. It's our job to keep them penned up until someone figures out who they are and how to deal with them.
Captain, won't this concentration leave border defense in jeopardy?
As I understand it, units are being pulled only from friendly borders. Nobody seriously thinks the Lone Star Confederation or the Guerni Republic or the Emerald Worlds want to invade us. There may be more smuggling than usual, but we can stand that.
Seabolt lingered when the others left.
I'm worried about security.
In what way, Commander?
Well, as you know...
Harris repressed a sigh. Seabolt insisted on starting off by telling her what she knew, what anyone with a brain knew, before finally coming to his point. And nothing she'd done had cured him of it so far.
As you know, there's a mutiny.
I had gathered that. And your point is?
This crew is full of people with no shipboard experience. We don't know if they're qualified. We don't know if they're a part of the conspiracy. Since everything's going smoothly now, I want to start working on their dossiers. Did you know we have 5 people aboard who belong to the Church of Unified Brethren? And they have been holding meetings in a squat bay.
No.
It's true. And there was an advisory out only 6 months ago about all religious groups, that they might harbor extremists.
I mean, no, you may not start witch hunting. I did know about Corporal Senis and Solis, and Pivot's Mercator, Janowitz, and Bader. They're not extremists, and the Unified Brethren have never been any problem.
But, Captain...
Commander, everything is going as smoothly as it is, although not nearly as smoothly as it should, because I am working very hard to find and nurture those who have competence. Among those people with competence is, for instance, Petty Major Tanira, who is also one of the Unified Brethren. There are at least 50, not 5, aboard. Tanira is the reason we didn't have a Level 3 incident when some idiot clerk out of your former office didn't see why a valve had to be shut to 3.2 exactly. I will not have you upsetting him or any of the others on the basis of some crackpot report generated a long way from real ships or real combat.
But, Captain...
Is that clear, Commander?
Yes, but I must respectfully disagree.
You can disagree all you want. But you will not, repeat, not, go digging around making people feel that they're not trusted. We may have a would-be mutineer aboard. If we do, the best way to make that person try something is to create distrust and disaffection among everyone else. We may have a Benignity spy, or a serial killer, or a person whose idea of fun is being thrashed with dead snakes by someone wearing green paint. But in all those cases, until something definite happens, our best strategy is to build up this crew. And building up the crew starts with building their competence and their confidence in their commanders.
You're just like they said.
And how was that?
Serranos, all of you. You won't listen to anyone else. You always think you know best.
Commander, aboard a ship the captain does know best. By definition. Check your regulations. It's in my job description. And if you act against my express orders... That is mutiny, Commander. You are walking a very thin edge.
Seabolt turned pale, and sweat glistened on his forehead.
I didn't mean... Of course, I just...
You are dismissed.
Yes, sir.
He left.
If only I had someone, anyone to put in his place.
But she didn't. She knew she wasn't at her best with his personality type. They annoyed her even when they were right. But she would have to find some way of dealing with him. Gunnar Tarakian had continued his occasional chats with Simon the Priest whenever he had time, and didn't want to let himself brood about Betharnia and the impossibility of asking her to marry him. They had gone from Simon's history, which seemed unbearably dull to Gunnar, a celibate life among books and scholars, to Gunnar's. Simon seemed to find the life of a merchant or captain as unattractive as Gunnar found Simon's, commenting that poor Gunnar had never had time to think a thought all the way through. Gunnar forbore to mention that thinking thoughts all the way through had led Simon to a death sentence, and turned the conversations back to religion and politics. Simon seemed convinced that the Familius Regnant's policy of religious tolerance would lead straight to anarchy and immorality. Gunnar felt his neck getting hot, as it often did around Simon.
That's a nasty thing to say. Do you think I'm immoral?
No, Captain. Not that I've seen. But I don't see how it can work in practice.
It's a matter of respect. We respect the other beliefs.
How can you respect something when you know it's wrong?
I don't know it's wrong. I may think it's wrong, and in fact, I may think a lot of the religions I've heard about don't make sense. But that doesn't mean I can't act in a civilized way about them. If you want to believe, oh, let's say you believe that a two-headed turtle created your planet, why should I argue with you? I think it's silly, but then most people believe some silly things. My cousin would tell you that my not wanting to marry again is silly.
But people's behavior depends on their beliefs. You can't trust someone's behavior if they think it's all right to do wrong things.
Look, a trader sees a lot. I know that some people use their beliefs, whatever they are, to make themselves better, kinder, more honest, more faithful, more responsible. Others use their beliefs as an excuse to lie, cheat, steal, and murder. All they have to do is tell themselves the other fellow isn't of their faith, and that makes it all right. Same beliefs, different people. And the good people can be found everywhere, believing all sorts of different things. And so can the bad. What I think is, religion makes a good person better, and a bad person worse.
Simon sat in silence, then finally shook his head.
I have to admit that even followers of the true faith have done terrible things in its name. But you're coming dangerously close to a famous old heresy, that of special election.
Never heard of it. Come on in.
Esme Suiza stood there, looking uncertain.
Yes, Sarah, do come in and join the argument. We're talking about religion.
I don't know much about religion.
That's fine, but you've met Simon, haven't you? He's a priest from the Benignity. Simon, Sarah Suiza is from Altiplano. He's just talking about special election. Sarah, have you ever heard of anything like that?
Some of the old believers, if you mean the idea that some are born naturally good and others naturally evil?
Exactly.
Some apples taste better than others. What's heretical about that?
Ah, now, did God make one apple sweet and another bitter?
I'm not God, Simon, so I don't know. What I am is a ship captain with, up to now, a clean record in the Familius Regnant and adjoining territories. Not anymore, thanks to you. If what you say is true...
It is.
Fine. Then you are just the sort of political refugee my seniors warned me about. But at least not criminal in this jurisdiction. You understand I will have to make a report. No doubt a long and tedious report. About you to both my seniors and whatever officialdom shows up at Castle Rock.
Of course. I hope it isn't too much trouble.
It is, but it has to be done. I don't suppose you know anyone in our government who can expedite this for us?
I'm sorry, but no.
Then perhaps you and Sarah Suiza can thrash out the theology while I get busy on the reports.
Gunnar stood up and winked at Esme, who was looking startled.
Only if you're willing, Sarah. But he might be interested in your world's beliefs.
Please, if your old believers are related to the Senations.
They left together. Gunnar wondered if there was any counterbalancing profit he could show to make up for what this was going to cost.
Find out anything more?
Yes. I still want to wring your neck. But he's certainly no common criminal. He's a religious nut.
He is. He seems quiet enough.
Don't get him started on good and evil and something called special election.
That sounds like politics.
No, he was about to drag me into whether God made apples differently sweet or they just came that way.
Oh, dear.
Yes, he's a heretic to the Benignity, a nut to me. And God knows what the Patriarch would think of him. But I'm not going to keep him around to find out. We dump him on the government at Castle Rock and steal quietly away.
Well, then... by the way, our hero of Xavier is making Bethia nervous.
Why? What's she doing?
Well, Bethia says she's having nightmares and won't talk about it.
Good grief, Basil. The woman's military. Of course she's not going to talk to an actress. And how does Bethia know she's having nightmares anyway?
Women have their ways. The thing is, I was wondering if we should notify anyone.
Who, for instance?
Oh, her family, maybe? If she needs help, they should know. And Bethia said she didn't have time to contact him back at Trinidad.
Well, I suppose when we get into Cenebra, we could offer to place a call for her. But I'm not going to do it behind her back. We don't have the right.